TeachNet Learning Podcast. I'm Pat Brennan, and I'm delighted to be joined today by Michael Barrett. Michael is the DreamSpace Audience Engagement Manager at Microsoft Ireland's Immersive STEM Learning Space. Michael, you're very welcome to the TeachNet Podcast.
Thank you very much for having me, Pat. I'm delighted to be here and very excited to talk all things teaching and DreamSpace and a huge range of topics I believe we're going to be getting onto today.
Well, that's the plan, Michael. So to get started, I suppose, get the ball rolling, you might tell me a little bit about yourself and I suppose ultimately your own path to DreamSpace and you know, how long you've been part of the team.
100%. So for me, Pat, I am a Mayo man. I am from the West. I'm from a place called Belmullet in the West of the West, really. I am a primary school teacher, first and foremost. I did my Bachelor of Education in DCU, graduated back in 2020. And my DreamSpace journey started on what was called the STEM Teacher Internship Program, which still runs today. But that internship program got me into Microsoft for a summer. It was the summer after I graduated. And I got to see what it was like to actually work within a STEM company and a large multinational company. And during that time, I got to spend 2 weeks with the DreamSpace team. And I will just say I fell head over heels for it instantly. After I finished that internship, very much expressed that would be a dream role for me. But then I went out teaching, and I was teaching for a while. And when a position became available, I was contacted and I kind of jumped on that. And I've been on the DreamSpace team now since October of 2020. Now, I suppose, kind of set a bit of context, that was kind of my journey into the role. If anyone is joining and listening who has never heard of DreamSpace, we are a STEM education venue that is run out of Microsoft Ireland. But we're also a team of educators and teachers with a mission to engage every young person on the island of Ireland with a STEM experience. And today we are currently 6 teachers strong with backgrounds in both primary and post-primary education. And our bread and butter since our launch back in 2018 has been having 2 schools in a day every single day, taking part in hands-on STEM experiences and workshops. But that one project stream over the years has evolved as the team has grown. We are now looking at around 15 different project streams, all with the mission and working towards the goal, engaging young people in STEM experiences.
I suppose, Michael, there's a couple of things that you're talking about. You're now a team of 6. And that the key part, I think, of this is the fact, and I think it's so valuable, that you are all teachers. You're starting with the pedagogy. You're coming at it from a teaching and learning perspective, not a technology perspective. And that's what has always, I suppose, intrigued me about DreamSpace. And obviously, as you know, we've crossed paths many times with TeachNet. And I spoke to Amanda back in October 22 in that podcast, if anyone wants to listen back to it. But I suppose where, and you've kind of already touched on it, where you're at now, what can, I suppose, teachers and students expect in DreamSpace?
Of course, yeah, 100%. So again, it's our bread and butter. It is a mainstay and it's kind of the heart of what DreamSpace is all about, which is our DreamSpace field trips. This is a free educational workshops that primary and post-primary schools can sign up for during summertime for the coming academic year. What that day looks like is teachers submit pre-surveys indicating to us what kind of level of STEM experiences the young people joining us would be on. And from that, then we build out a workshop to engage those young people and meeting them where they are in terms of their STEM journeys. That workshop typically looks like hands-on activities. We're very much focused on project-based tasks, very much actively working with the students. Typically, we break it down into 2 core activities within those 2.5-hour, 3-hour sessions that they're working on with us. A lot of the time, it is device activities in which we're using MakeCode for Microbit, MakeCode Arcade, or Minecraft Education, or Python. But then we're also pairing that a lot of the time with either unplugged challenges that seeks to kind of build collaboration skills or even kind of focusing on the engineering of STEM with some kind of build challenges. We also then have robotics in there as well. And the idea and the goal is that every young person leaving DreamSpace after their 2.5-3-hour workshop is that they're walking away from that with a greater understanding of what STEM is, a greater understanding of what skills are important for future careers or future roles. And the idea, and it's reflected across all the different programs that we offer, is that young people have an understanding of, okay, I can pursue STEM if I so choose. rather than a student saying, oh, I'm not good at tech or coding or STEM, purely down to the fact that they've never experienced it before. It is truly about giving them that experience, showcasing them what that is, and giving them the agency to decide if this is something they'd like to pursue in the future, whether as a career or as a job. That's mainly for our post-primary, or even for our primary, talking about maybe future subject choices when they're moving into secondary level. And that's kind of the heart of DreamSpace. But again, that's only one program, but those values are reflected across all the different project streams we have. But that's the heart of what DreamSpace is with our field trips.
What I like there is that idea of because particularly, and we hear a lot of talk about it, and why aren't people going into careers in STEM or going into computer science, and why is it very heavily male orientated? These are all discussions that are, and this is a global thing, but I do think a key part of that is that for a lot of students, this whole thing of STEM and computer science is abstract. And I think what you're doing there is you're making it practical, realistic. This is what it's about. What I suppose I'll move on to, I referenced already that I've had the pleasure of working with you and the DreamSpace team previously, particularly around our blended, the TeachNet blended learning courses that we delivered as a blended approach with sessions in DreamSpace and also online through the TeachNet portal. But I suppose that actually, where actually our paths first crossed, you were delivering the face-to-face sessions of the Crafting a Game-Based Learning Environment course. And you've been delivering it ever since. And one thing I'll say about that from being there, it's patently obvious this is something it's close to your heart, the whole area of game-based learning, but in particular, Minecraft Education Edition. So maybe we could start, first of all, if you can tell me, what differentiates the education edition of Minecraft from, I suppose, the console version, and this passion of yours around game-based learning? Where does it come from?
Yeah, so I suppose starting from the top, it's important to kind of first off make sure educators are aware of what Minecraft is themselves. A lot of the time they might have just heard the term, whether they played it themselves previously, or maybe the young people in their lives play it, or maybe other people in their lives play it. So Minecraft is a 3D block-based video game. The idea is that everything in-game and everything in the world that you're working within occupies a space of a block or a cube. And some might find that first a little bit, let's say, restrictive, but the idea is that these blocks and these cubes can be put together to build legitimately anything. So the possibilities are kind of truly endless. It gained massive popularity due to the fact of the creativity and collaboration, you know, multiplayer functionality and features have had entire friendship groups formed around the idea of just playing Minecraft together. And there's multiple different kind of ways of playing. You play survival, in which you survive the night and you're fighting off creepers and skeletons and endermen and so on and so forth. But then you have the creative mode side of things, in which you have access to every item and every block in game, and you have free reign to build whatever you want. And kind of the only limitation there truly is kind of like imagination. But that is Minecraft. But then Minecraft Education, which launched back in 2016, is essentially everything that Minecraft is, but with an additional layer placed on top of it to make it an extremely powerful learning tool. Some kind of key features to kind of call out there that kind of sets it apart is that, first and foremost, it comes with hundreds and if not thousands of pre-made lessons and resources and worlds made specifically for use in the classroom. And I think this is something that a lot of teachers might be a bit hesitant on or fearful of when they first kind of encounter Minecraft, is the idea of, I know my students love it, but how would I ever be able to make a lesson plan on it? I'm not a true Minecraft master myself. But that whole creation of an original idea and a lesson truly is far down on your journey when it comes to Minecraft education. There's so many lessons pre-made that are already aligned to the topics and areas you're already delivering. And it's all about just kind of picking them up and utilizing them in the classroom. The other kind of things that kind of set it apart is there's some tools that are unique to this version of Minecraft that make it applicable for school usage. We have formative assessment tools such as our camera, our portfolio, our book and quill, our chalkboards that allow teachers to actually assess and ensure students are actually learning in-game rather than having to always join their worlds. They can actually showcase the learning that they've done and take part in in-game by exporting things such as PDFs and images to showcase what they've done in-game. And I know, again, that's always kind of a fear that educators might have is, how would I even know they're learning in there? And I think when it comes down to it, Pat, is that at its heart, Minecraft Education is kind of built on the idea and the approach of game-based learning. And as you said, it's an area that I'm personally extremely passionate about. I grew up playing video games. I still play video games to this day. But that kind of has been at the heart of my focus on it. And then the impact that I have seen it have on the classrooms of Ireland and now even internationally as well. Because when it comes down to game-based learning, you are achieving specific learning outcomes, true learning in-game using a video game as the medium for that. But just one thing I always like to kind of clarify, and this is kind of like a kind of misconception that's always kind of had, is sometimes educators fall into the trap of using gamification and game-based learning as they're the same thing, but they're actually different approaches. Gamification is the utilization of game structures and incentives on non-game related tasks to engage young people. Your cahoots or even your class star board, in which students are achieving stars to get some kind of a prize at the end or level up with a no homework pass. That's gamification, but game-based learning is actually the usage of a game to achieve learning outcomes. And I'll finish this whole piece, Pat, with is that you do not have to be a good Minecraft player to be a good and an amazing Minecraft educator, because, again, teachers fall into the trap of thinking, I've never played it before, how could I ever possibly lead a lesson on it? But it truly comes down to moving from that fountain of knowledge role into more of a facilitator role, because your students are going to be the experts in this area.
A couple of things there I'd like to pick up on, but a key one there is a huge issue is this idea. They are going to know more about gaming than the teacher, and I think it's getting beyond that. And I think that's a huge thing. And you mentioned the guide on the side, or that's the phrase they use. You're not the fountain of all knowledge up the top. And it's the idea of giving them the freedom to do it. The other thing, I suppose, often the two are game-based learning and gamification are seen as one and the same, and they're not, as you've explained. But I suppose, can you give me just one practical example of how a teacher, brand new to this, could go in and teach a lesson or a series of lessons using Minecraft education?
Yeah, 100%. Look, I suppose there's actually so much there. It's nearly hard to kind of drill down on one. But I'll just use some examples that I've seen. We have had educators share with us that they've worked on classroom-based projects in which, let's say, transition years have recreated one-to-one their school, a virtual version, and a walkthrough of their school in which they then actually share that with incoming first years to help get a better understanding of the layout and a better understanding of the roots within the school itself. And I thought that was just such an ingenious way of having students take such kind of great leadership roles within a school community, giving back to even kind of future classes and future year groups. That was just a fun one that I always think is so, so interesting. But when it comes down to actual specific lessons, if you're looking at the realm of even computer science or the short coding course for JC, there is entire curriculum out there developed for educators to be able to teach core coding concepts through Minecraft Education, because again, that's one of the unique features that needs to be called out. Minecraft Education supports MakeCode, which you might be familiar with if you're listening to this and you've delivered any coding lessons before. Similar interface and the same platform that is MakeCode for Microbit or MakeCode Arcade, actually integrated into the game itself. And it's really cool. You can fundamentally change the world around you while students are learning in block-based coding, Python programming, or even JavaScript as well. There's an entire curriculum there that can be aligned one-to-one to coding courses and curriculums themselves. But I suppose it's always just the simple ones, Pat, as well. You'll have primary school groups using Minecraft Education to explore the topic of history, our place in space, our place in history. Envision in our local community 100 years ago, what did that look like? That can spark conversations about what a young people's day-to-day life looked like back then, comparison to now. And again, you have such great sense of engagement in that, rather than just, let's say, the typical lesson to approach that, which would be pen and paper activities and slideshows and so on and so forth. You actually have young people kind of take very much a hands-on approach to that as well. But those are just the splattering of lesson ideas and topics that can go on forever, as you can probably tell.
Yeah. No, I think it's great to hear it. And that's why, you've given a couple of really good examples there and practical examples. And once again, I suppose that there is a whole universe of content out there. So you're not reinventing the wheel. You're not going in there trying to build a lesson. Yeah. You can take it. And like with all good content, you can adapt it to your situation. And it's interesting. I mean, the first time I heard of Minecraft, and at the time I think it was called Minecraft EDU, a project that was done around the commemoration of the Easter Rising. It was called Mind Rising. And some of those videos are still actually available. Amazing, some of the stuff that was done around that. That was the first time I suppose I was really taken aback. And I know when I spoke to Amanda, she spoke to me at length about the Ireland's Future is Mine project. And I know you were heavily involved in that particular project. Two things on that. First of all, if you can just briefly tell me what was involved in that project and what made it such a special project. Secondly, you know, are there plans in the making for future similar events? Are, you know, where do you see this going?
I think when it comes to Ireland's Future is Mine, what a project. Honestly, it's still a project and a program that I'm incredibly proud of. Years later, and I was only one aspect of it, the entire team at the time were the kind of pure powerhouses behind it. So Ireland's Future is Mine, some people listening might have even taken part, or if you haven't heard of it, it was an initiative we ran a couple of years ago in which we gave every primary school on the island of Ireland free access to Minecraft education, because you do need a Minecraft education license to access the game fully. And then we actually pair that with one of our project streams that we all have I've mentioned earlier on. One of those 15 is DreamSpace TV, which is our on-demand web series that we have created. And it was a fantastic initiative. 6 episodes, 6 lesson plans. 6 challenges to have students and educators who've never played Minecraft before start from the very first block to the challenge at the end, in which they actually had to recreate their local area with sustainability in mind. And to your point, Pat, earlier on from those videos, some of the submissions and some of the videos that were submitted for that piece there are still available online right now. Highly recommend anyone checking it out. But the cool thing about that initiative was that that was actually a competition at the time. So we had provincial champions take part in a live esports final here in DreamSpace. And then we had then the 2 finalists of that actually take part in a final challenge out in a production studio here in Dublin. And we actually created the first ever, in partnership with RDE, the first ever nationally broadcast esports TV show. And you can watch that in full right now on YouTube, called Ireland's Future is Mine. And it was incredible. The work done there is amazing. And watching that show and watching that video in full, honestly, if you don't come away from that 1 hour special knowing that Minecraft education is a fantastic tool to teach in your classrooms, I don't think anything could convince you, because some of the things the students pull off, some of the skills that they showcase are just truly incredible. And in terms of future plans, we are still working on numerous different Minecraft education initiatives. I always like to flag when it comes to the usage of Minecraft education, if your school is a community national school, or if you fall under the ETB banner, your ETB accounts actually have full access to Minecraft education. So that is a big flag. If you're a school based up in Northern Ireland, you have full access to Minecraft education as well. There's a lot of secondary schools out there as well that I know have. They have Microsoft accounts for their students. Sometimes they might have access and they don't even know it. I highly recommend just checking to see if you have access. And then even for primary schools, I know this is a big one, especially here in Ireland in comparison to other countries. A lot of our primary schools actually don't have student email addresses. Every school is completely independent to decide what they want to use and how they want to approach that. And that typically is the challenge, in which you need to have an email address to access it. There's ways around that. You can purchase camps and clubs accounts for your school. But the big thing, and this is a really important one to flag, Pat, is that Minecraft education is free to download. It is available on absolutely every platform: Windows, Mac, iPads, Android tablets, iPhones, and it is free to download off the App Store or on aka.ms/Minecraft download. And you can access numerous free demo lessons without ever having to even touch or have access to a Microsoft email address. And I think that one's really important, because you could have weeks worth of amazing schemes of work and lessons built around those free demo lessons at your fingertips without even having to worry about purchasing a Minecraft license. And that is always my recommendation. Download it, check out those demo lessons, have a play around with them, because some of them are truly incredible.
It's interesting that you're covering that, because, you know, like with anything, licensing and technologies get in the way of things. But it's great to see that there's a route into this, to play with it, to use it. And in a lot of cases, I would imagine there are plenty of people listening to this who already have acts and they probably don't know they have.
Mm. But
for those schools or some teacher who's interested in getting involved, where do they go if they need to get licenses and they want to have set up their own worlds and the whole nine yards? What's the process?
Yeah, so the process there is, more often than not, it is all about what kind of accounts you already have in your school, contacting whoever is the IT admin in your school around that, or company or reseller, whoever you're working with. Discuss it with them around licensing and potentially adding it onto whatever licensing you already have. And then just exploring the Minecraft Education website as well, downloading it. Once again, you can download it without ever having to even think about a license. And truly, Pat, this is what I recommend. Download it, access those demo worlds. This is a try before you buy type scenario. There's one thing that I'm focusing on over the next couple of months. I do a bit of work as well outside of my DreamSpace role directly with the Minecraft Education team in America. I'm doing training now and upcoming webinars around their AI Foundations curriculum. And that AI Foundations curriculum is all about showcasing young people how to use AI responsibly, how to use it ethically, how it works, how to engage with it, and to hopefully kind of spark some classroom discussions around responsible classroom use and even academic integrity and so on and so forth. That AI Foundations curriculum, there is actually the majority of it can be covered using demo lessons that are available, meaning that you can complete majority of this curriculum without ever having to even worry about downloading a license. And you can actually learn more about that curriculum by going to ak.ms/Minecraft AI.
Look, I mean, the other thing there, any of these links that you're mentioned, I'm ensured they're in the show notes so people can follow them directly from there. But I am hearing your message loud and clear that licensing is something that has to be considered, but it should not in any circumstances decide whether someone is going to actually try out this or not. So I think that that's a key message to get across. And it's interesting, I mean, we can't have a podcast these days without mentioning the word AI. And it's interesting that AI curriculum, I mean, I do think that's a huge part of the ethical use. And people are grappling a lot with that. And I think they need guidance. Yes, it's extremely powerful. And yes, it'll do amazing things. I'm going to actually ask you about that briefly before we finish up. But there is the other side, that there is a lot of things. It's kind of getting that balanced approach. And I do think the first port of call is getting that sense, that understanding of it, and that sense of how do I use it and what are the possible pitfalls. Brilliant that that is included. It can be, once again, like you were talking about the tour of the school for first years, this can be done in an environment, a virtual, engaging, immersive environment. You know, it's funny, this podcast came from a conversation we had in London in January at the BET, the Microsoft BET stand. You know, what I was struck by at that is how much AI has matured in the last 12 months. I remember we all talk about the bells and the whistles and the tools. But when we came back 12 months later, these things have been steadily integrated into a lot of tools. And obviously, to talk about Microsoft, you know, you're looking at integration into some of their learning accelerators. You're looking at integration, you know, into the 365 apps. You're looking particularly in things like Teams, obviously Copilot itself, Copilot for Education.
Of course.
Like, this is where these tools are going, be it Microsoft, Google, be it Adobe, whoever. But I suppose coming back to squarely the idea of starting with teaching and learning and that as an educator, where do you think Gen AI in education is going? As I said, no pressure on this question at all, but we'd all love to have a crystal ball on this one.
My personal opinion on it, Pat, is this. It's, I think educators, if you look back historically, educators have always had to rise to meet the needs of the students that are in front of us. We've had major shifts before. I wasn't in the teaching field at the time, but introduction of the web was all about global knowledge being in your students' back pockets. We had our one-to-one devices or mobile phones in classrooms and so on and so forth. That is something we need to still kind of address. We have the idea of learning platforms and even hybrid learning a couple of years ago. So these are all kind of massive shifts that educators have risen to meet, because we are with the common goal of just ensuring our young people have the skills and the necessary experience to kind of meet the world that we live in currently. When I look at artificial intelligence, when I look at AI, I completely understand some people's apprehensions, some people's fears around it. But my dream scenario is that AI in the future can hopefully look to ease some of the workload on teachers. Whether you're a primary, post-primary, further ed, I think we can all agree as educators, the curriculum is a lot to cover. You have a lot to teach. I think sometimes people don't take into account the planning and the administrative work that needs to be done outside of your student-facing role when you're actually at the top of the classroom educating your young people, which is what everyone just assumes that's the only thing you do. My dream scenario is that AI tools like Copilot can hopefully ease some of that work, hopefully look to kind of create easier kind of brainstorming sessions for teachers, and hopefully as well look to kind of create more personalized learning experiences for the students that are sitting in front of them. I've taught modules on AI prompting that has kind of looked to see, okay, you always, let's say a primary school teacher, you teach the same ancient Egypt module every year or unit or lesson. How can you maybe customize it a little bit more to meet the interests and the needs of the students that you have then and there? And it's all about kind of just working with your AI assistant to hopefully kind of customize that to meet differentiation needs, maybe even meet the needs and interests of your students, and essentially just creating kind of more creative, personalized learning experiences. My dream scenario is that we view it exactly how it is, as an assistant. We don't hand over the full reins and the full wheel to it, but that assistant is there to help you brainstorm and kind of ease some of the workload. And in the end, easing that workload and helping with the creation of those learning experiences will wind up with better experiences for our young people.
You're hitting all the bases there, Michael. To use that overly used phrase, it all comes back to the human in the loop. And it's about the teacher using the tool to help them and not be led by it. I'm delighted that we've had the opportunity to talk in depth around Minecraft Education Edition, but really outside of that, we've only really touched on the periphery of what goes on in Dreamspace. And so maybe at the start of next year, let's have a conversation. You know, what's the plan as you go into a new academic year? Just before we finish up, I've always said that from my own experience with Dreamspace, I think it's an absolutely wonderful initiative. I think what you're doing there is really, really great work. But somebody listening to this then, right, I'm going to try and follow up on Dreamspace. How do they do it? What's the best route?
First and foremost, go to dreamspace.ie. Dreamspace.ie is our website, and you'll see a banner at the top there which prompts you to sign up to our newsletter. We have a monthly newsletter that goes out and that showcases everything that we run. But that website as well is home to dozens upon dozens of free STEM education resources. We have the likes of our Digital Academy, which are student-led, module-based kind of online learning. We have Dreamspace TV, which are on-demand web episodes. We have our Dreamspace Ambassador Program, which is led by my amazing colleague, Niamh Hyland. We have two teacher academies led by the incredible Amanda Jolliffe and Corey Hughes, and also our all-up Dreamspace Digital Skills Teacher Academy led by Amanda. We have a recently released podcast series by my colleague, Lorraine Drum, called Dream Big, which we actually interview some Microsoft employees about their careers and their career paths, how you got there. It's an amazing series there by Lorraine. And yeah, there's just so much up there, Pat. I'd highly recommend just checking out that website. And a final call out, because I've named all other teachers, we have a new joiner on the team, Olivia Diamond, who is a fellow Mayo person. But dreamspace.ie, check it out. Tons of free resources. And a major thing just to flag as well, I know a lot of people might be listening and thinking it's Microsoft Ireland Dreamspace. We are platform agnostic. So we work with every school on the island of Ireland, no matter your STEM education experience or the platforms that you use within your own classroom. We have resources there to support you.
Michael, I thought I knew a lot about what was going on at Dreamspace. I obviously knew very little. This has really been great. And I just want to thank you for joining us on the TeachNet podcast. And hopefully we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks a million, Pat. And thanks, everybody, for joining us.